After the spears were thrown without having hit, the hissing boomerangs came flying over to us.
In 1848, German naturalist Ludwig Leichhardt attempted to cross the entire Australian continent. Tragically, he and his men were never seen again. Leichhardt came to Australia in 1842 and spent 2 years exploring the mountains between Sydney and Brisbane. Along with plants, animals, and geography, he also documented the ancient foraging cultures that were rapidly disappearing. The narration for this video is taken from his diaries.
I have observed the blacks in many circumstances. I have seen him as remnant of powerful tribes with his humpies before the public house, and I have seen him as a member of powerful, independent, warlike tribes. In my journal, there are many remarks which point at astuteness and at determination. The black, with his weapons, is no coward. Calmly, he meets his enemies. He only fears unknown misfortune, such as the unknown wild blacks, whom his superstition endows with great power, and the white man with horse and gun. Let us return to the times when the free German lived in his cold forest. It seems to me that here is not much difference from the blacks of this region. They live together in little families. The whole tribe only comes together to fight, and not several friendly tribes. They lack chiefs. The elder alone has some power. The boys were initiated by degrees into the secrets of the elders. They marry by either stealing a wife or by being given one by a member of a friendly tribe, usually after distinguishing themselves in fighting. They often have three or more wives. Their battles bear more the character of tournaments. Both the disputing parties begin the battle song and then stand fast in battle lines opposite one another. They throw their spears, their woomeras and waddies, which they likewise use in hand-to-hand fighting. They protect themselves with their shields. A black is rarely killed in these battles, but often wounded. Each one seems to have his opponent, and so the general fight becomes a single combat. As soon as one falls or is severely wounded, all his friends direct their spears at the same time against the one who caused the wound, and the latter, unable to avoid so many spears at once, either flees immediately or often falls in consequence of such a general attack. Blood revenge seems, however, to rest on him until either he is killed in consequence of it, or he pacifies the friends and relatives of the fallen one by gifts. Extermination battles seem to be completely lacking. I have only one example of a nocturnal raid, which I heard from Baker, who lived for 14 years among the blacks. The raid was foiled. Those attacked pursued the enemy tribe and killed many, including men, women, and children. This usually doesn't happen, women and children being spared. It seems, however, that the blacks try to do all possible damage to other tribes because they are extremely afraid of falling into the hands of hostile blacks. A black never walks alone willingly. He always has a companion who keeps watch when his friend climbs trees to look for possums or honey. When I went out with a black and he climbed trees for me, he usually asked me to watch out that no hostile black surprised him. This fear seemed to indicate the danger to which they are exposed by unexpected attack. Still, they have just as much fear of spirits and ghosts, with which their imagination populates the forest and the night. All unknown blacks are enemies, whom they fear enormously. The southern blacks call these Miles, and those of the local region, Jakurus. Joint corroboree dances are signs of peace and alliances. The various tribes distinguish themselves in the use of various weapons. The blacks of Sydney and the Hunter are expert spear throwers. Those of the Liverpool Plains know best how to use the Womering, and those of Moreton Bay fight best with the Noola Noola or Waddy, with which they exercise constantly in the hunting of kangaroos and kangaroo rats. Mr. Thomas Archer constructed a bow. I feared the blacks would immediately adopt such a very dangerous weapon, but they seemed not to want to take advantage of this important, in any case for them, discovery. This was indeed also the case in Europe with firearms. The Chinese know firearms, and yet the bow remained as their principal weapon. Only a superior enemy would compel them to choose his superior weapon. The blacks never make use of the tomahawk instead of a waddy, although they could give very dangerous, more deadly wounds with the hatchet of the Europeans. Their superstition serves as another means to injure their enemies. They try to conjure stones into the body of the enemy. They explain illness by the presence of stones in the body. Yaka mudlu is the expression with which they designate this. They go to high mountains, Biroa, watch there overnight and seem to observe superstitious ceremonies. Every illness is explained by such magic spells of enemy blacks. On Mr. Rustin's station, there was a black, Suzanne, on whom old Jerry struck such a wound on the head with his nulla nulla that the brain was completely visible, and it is a miracle that this woman, who was pregnant, not only did not abort, but had recovered again in about 12 days. A young man, Morris, desired to marry Suzanne. Mr. Rustin therefore ordered his people to banish Suzanne from the hut. This took place. However, Suzanne wanted no association with this tribe, by which she was so badly treated, and decided to continue her journey to the Namoi after complete recovery. However, Morris waylaid her and brought her back to the camp. Later, she received a heavy blow in the flank by the king of the tribe, because she had left the camp to go to the Namoi. I don't know what consequences this will have, but it is unbelievable how quickly their wounds heal, although they seem almost to succumb on receipt of them in cases where I was present. King Steffi seems to have punished her for her escape, and this hard punishment now seemed to cause the general fight. On 9th May, the day before I left Rustin's station, a loud shouting behind the house called me from the room. I went and saw our black guests fully in hand-to-hand combat, and Suzanne, on whom King Steffi had dealt a hefty blow in the flank with his nulla nulla. The poor woman was far advanced in pregnancy, and she filled the air with penetrating, lamenting cries. Finally, she was led to her fire, and the men continued the fight. Morris, a handsome young man, came out of the crowd with another, armed with helaman and nulla nulla, and they applied themselves calmly, almost casually, to the fight, and began by turns to direct sustained hefty blows with the nulla nullas on one another, which they parried with the helaman. After three or four blows, Morris's opponent tumbled down, and Morris fled a good way off, followed noisily by the remaining men of the tribe, while the women and the blind man collected around the fallen one with loud, penetrating, lamenting cries, laid his head in their laps, wiping the blood from his wound and shooing away the flies from him. The blow had split the upper lip and crushed the lower lip bloodily, but the upper jaw was not broken, as we feared at first. During this time, Morris had to withstand a severe struggle. However, others took his part, and so a crowd of blows fell on all sides, almost without exception given from behind, while the enemy crept up from behind and then directed his blow towards the head of his opponent. Gradually, however, the shouting crowd broke up, and several regular single combats took place. Thus King Steffi, an extremely strong and well-built man, fought Jimmy with spears, boomerang, and nulla nulla. After the spears were thrown without having hit, the hissing boomerangs came flying over to us. As it seemed to me, they were thrown at the feet of the opponent, and both fighters knew how to avoid them by springing into the air. The boomerang then rose into the air considerably and fell down behind the opponent in the far distance. After the boomerangs were exhausted, the combatants approached with their nulla nullas, without helaman, and threw these, and a boomerang hit Tommy and cut out a piece of his skin just under the ankle joint. With this, the fight seemed to be set aside for the moment, and other battles drew our attention. At the same time, the women always interceded, screaming to separate the combatants. However, when they found that their efforts were fruitless, they calmly waited for the outcome. Few of these men came away from it without wounds. Many were covered with blood, making them look like cannibals. During the fight, and whilst the wounded lay around everywhere or limped about, the whites formed idle onlookers and prevented me almost unanimously from examination with the words, "Let them beat themselves to death, then we will be rid of them. The more the better." I have found similar battles over the whole colony, and it seems to me that one has to criticize not the white settlers for this, but the government. Fights of this kind, which must frequently take place with wild people whose passions cannot be discharged against hostile neighboring tribes, will soon devastate the male part of the black population.